Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Side Hustles and Stuff podcast. This is episode 55 with Keishin Yuri.
Hey Yuri, how are you?
I'm doing all right. It's a little bit muggy and I think jime is the word.
Yeah.
Humid?
Yeah, it's humid.
In Japan. Other than that, doing okay. Let's talk about the drinks. What do you got? So I have the pineapple flavored water.
Nice.
Which tastes pretty damn good.
Yeah, it looks pretty refreshing.
Oh, it is refreshing.
And I can see the mist or whatever it is from it being refrigerated.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. On the photo.
It's not mist. It's a condensation.
Yeah, the condensation.
Yeah, if you look up refreshing in a dictionary, you will see this drink. It's the definition of it. What do you have on your end?
Yeah, I've got another Fanta. A special edition, I guess. Limited edition. Seasonal. Mm-hmm. It's called Fanta Sumomo. So I was just looking what Sumomo stands for. It's Prunus salicina.
What is that?
Commonly called the Japanese plum or Chinese plum.
Let me Google that. What is the Chinese or Japanese plum? So it's not like, it's not the more purplish type of plums that exist, right?
No, it's like, what is it? Orange?
Okay.
Red and green, kind of.
What's the flavor like?
We have to find out.
There's that pop.
Yeah, I like it. It's not as sweet as some of the other Fantas. And I think it's pretty refreshing. I guess it's meant to because it's like a seasonal special.
So
probably meant for relatively hot summer days. So, although now with the rainy season, it's been relatively cool. But like you said, I'm humid.
It's humid, yeah. I have my reader in front of me. It's 56% humidity in my room right now, which is fine.
Nice. Do you have... I was watching... I saw some Twitter... or whatever it was the other day, of some guy posting a CO2 meter. Does your thing also give you the CO2?
I don't. Do you?
No, I was looking into it, though. You can buy the sensors or the measuring devices, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it for like 7,000 yen on Amazon. What is it, like $60, $70?
Okay.
But yeah, the guy was saying that essentially he was kind of feeling unproductive and like I guess he had some headaches and like felt tired.
Yeah.
And then he measured the CO2 and it was however many particles per whatever the measure is. I'm no climate scientist, so I don't know. But anyways, there's this measure and like generally it's within a certain range.
Mm-hmm.
And it was considerably higher for him. So
where was he when at the time of the reading?
You mean the guy?
Yeah.
I don't know where exactly, but I think somewhere in the United States. But I think the point was more in the fact that it was just a matter of ventilation. So.
No, yeah, that's what I mean. Like, where was he? Because I imagine if he's like at home or in an office or just out of curiosity, what the ventilation like, what the ventilation was like there.
Yeah, I'm not sure actually, but I'm sure I have the same issue here. I should open the window a bit more frequently, perhaps.
I mean, right now is not the best time to open a window.
Yeah.
If I open the window, I'm going to watch this humidity meter go skyrocket up.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, that's kind of like the tricky situation of living in Japan, because I don't know if any other, like at least the States is, I mean, New York is pretty humid, but I don't know if it's like to the point of Japan where you have to keep an eye out on it and like watch for mildew and fungi developing like over here. Well I mean I'm sure it's possible in various areas of the world, but it's very I kind of started paying attention to it much more in Japan than other places.
Yeah I think Japan has a problem with mold just because it's so humid.
Yeah, so that's why I like I have this reader right here, so I know like what the status of my air is, if it's like too dry or too humid.
Yeah, I might try to buy the CO2 monitor. I think I don't know what the results are. I'm not even sure if it will make me act on it or something, but
yeah,
it just seems like a fun little device to try to buy and see how it works.
Do you expect there's a lot of carbon dioxide in your room?
I wouldn't be surprised, because to be honest, I don't open the window here in my office that too often. So
okay.
I wouldn't be surprised. But then again, I have no idea how much air gets like refreshed through the door and we open the other doors.
Yeah.
More often, so
don't you have the they're not like ventilators, it's like I don't know what the proper word for this is, but it's like inside the wall, but it also goes out. How would I even say this? Vents, I guess they're vents. I have vents right here, or if I like press in on it, it is going to close. If I press on it again, it's going to pop out, basically a vent to the outside.
So yeah, I think there's some on the on the balcony doors or the balcony windows, like the Japanese would say. The sliding ones, I think they have some stuff at the top that's meant to be for having air circulate.
Yeah.
And my girlfriend keeps the or my fiance, I guess, keeps the
update the lingo, dude.
Keeps the kitchen window open most of the time, at least to some extent. So I think those rooms are fine. I guess the problem with my office is that it's kind of separated from the rest of the apartment by the, what do you call it?
Hallway?
Yeah, by the hallway.
We're running out of English words today. Maybe there's too much CO2 in the air.
I think something worse,
carbon monoxide. You might be a reader for that.
Exactly. But by the hallway, and and I rarely open the window here. I should do so more often.
Yeah.
But as you say, I don't think today is the day.
For anyone that doesn't know, Japan has rainy seasons, which is pretty much usually all of June into July. And this time of year, I think it came late because most of June was pretty much sunny.
Yeah.
Basically, it's just 1 month long of like nonstop rain and or just cloudy, humid weather or drizzling weather.
Yeah. And more than anything, I think just the thing that annoys me the most is the unpredictability of the weather. The rain forecast will say rain, but then it ends up not raining.
Yeah.
Or in the worst case, I guess they say no rain and then it ends up raining and being thunderstorm or whatever. I don't know if you saw the footage from, what was it, Atami?
Yeah, I saw.
Yeah, it's terrible. There were the landslides. Yeah, flooding and landslides. Seems like there's something every year now. There's also been some stuff in Kumamoto, I think, a couple of years back.
It's scary. Imagine being on over there and seeing that flash flood coming. It's because it's like, the crazy part is it's like it arrives literally in seconds without much time to react.
Yeah, it's crazy. And the rain's been pretty strong the last couple of days, I think.
Yes. Tokyo usually does not have to deal with this stuff. But yeah, given the way the weather works and has been increasing with intensity, I think maybe just a matter of time.
I think the place we live at, here in Nerima, there's no sea nearby, so there's no danger of tsunami or anything like that. We live in a fairly, it's just a three-floor building, so it's not like it's gonna shake too much in an earthquake. I don't think there's any danger of landslides. I haven't seen any hill around. So I think it's about as safe as it gets. In Japan, probably.
I
shouldn't say that because the next thing I know.
it's funny. Like I try to avoid making these statements.
I know.
Because things have happened to me in the past. And like that. Like I know it's irrational, but man, I'd rather not jinx myself.
Yeah, exactly. Like the moment I said it, I was like, oh, all right.
Yeah, like, oh, damn.
Get ready for the madness.
Somewhere there's like the, if fate was a character, his ears perked up like, oh, oh really? Well, let me prove you wrong.
Yeah, I wonder if somebody just listens into all these conversations and then goes like, all right, let's send an earthquake here. Let's send a
all right, he a asked flood here. Someone out there said that nothing bad ever happened to them. You know, here's an interesting thing. It's like back in high school, actually my third day of high school,
in
New York, I got hit by a car. And it's funny because I think it was either that day, or I think it was the first day or something, where in health class, we had health class and we were given an in-class assignment to write about something health related. And stupid me, I think I was 13 years old at that point. I was thinking like, aha, nothing ever happened to me, so I'm just going to make something up. But it was that I had that kind of like prideful, boastful giggle inside my head, like nothing ever happened. And then, you know, I get hit by a car. on a Friday, third day of high school, which knocked me out for all of the semester because I was at home with the cast.
Yeah.
So ever since then, I was like, all right. Well, I don't know if there's any connection, but like it just really makes you want to not say things and be a little more careful.
Yeah. I think it's like with, what do you call it, when astrology or whatever, like predicting people's future.
Yeah.
It's like some things are so general that if something happens, you can, in your recent memory, you definitely have something that kind of quote unquote predicts that, or that can be mapped to that thing that happened, even though it's like complete coincidence. But you go and you somehow manage to find the one thing that did you said or thought or whatever that then applies to what happened,
even though it may not apply at all.
Yeah, especially in case like car accidents, I guess. Because again, I think there's some things where the mindset is important, but I doubt anybody thinks about car accident thinking, oh, I'm gonna get hit by a car, and actually gets hit by a car.
Yeah,
for that reason. So yeah, those things are just coincidences. Or so we would like to believe.
But still, it makes you, when you start saying things like that, you're like, you end up checking yourself. Like, hold on, let me take that back.
Yeah, exactly. There's something about it. It's not even about believing it or whatever. There's just something strange about when you say something like this, and you're like,
yeah,
because eventually there's only two options right here.
Yeah,
either you're gonna die or it's gonna happen, pretty much for most of these things. Like,
yeah,
if you live in Japan long enough,
you will experience an earthquake.
Yeah, you will probably have something like that.
If you stay here at least for a month, I think you can experience one.
Yeah, some of them. It's interesting, actually, because as you know, I think, and as I mentioned here a couple times, I used to come to Japan every year for the summer for a month or even longer sometimes, I think, mm-hmm. when I was a bit smaller. And like, I don't really remember any earthquake. I'm sure there have been some. But then I think the first time I actually realized, oh, there's earthquake, was actually the 311 one.
Uh-huh.
And since then, I can feel all the earthquakes pretty much. Because since then, it's like, all right, is this earthquake going to end now, or is it going to continue? Or like, there's the element of uncertainty that makes it kind of scary.
Yeah. Yeah, it's living with that constant paranoia.
Yeah, like I think we were talking about those here a while back. But like, I think there was like two or three pretty strong earthquakes, more or less in a row, within like a span of a couple of weeks or something.
Yeah,
like earlier this year it was, right? And those earthquakes were pretty strong and long, and I'm standing here, I'm holding the bookshelf trying to prevent it from falling down.
I was holding my rice cooker.
Yeah, you were mentioning that. and I'm just thinking, when is this thing gonna end? And it's like, you don't know, right? It's like,
yeah,
it can shake another five times. It can snap right there.
It's with intensity suddenly.
Yeah, that too. It's like, and a lot of these, I guess, start pretty slow and then kind of increase in intensity. And then I think the ones that are kind of, that have the epicenter below you, they're more kind of like up and down sort of motion. Versus like if you're further, it's more of a sideways. Yeah. So there's different earthquakes. And on one hand, I think it's really fascinating. Like it just, to me, just fascinating that you can't even take the solid ground below your feet for granted, essentially. Right. And on the other hand, it's really scary.
Yeah. I always thought like maybe they should start building pyramids. For some reason, the thought came to my mind that maybe a pyramid would, you know, because it's like the bottom of it. It's widely... Well, you know, it's like it's much wider at the bottom than it is at the top.
I wonder if it would just crumble.
Yeah, I don't know. This was my first impression, but I don't know how valid it is to how well. Because obviously, with like tall buildings, they're designed to sway in Japan. So, like, but the swaying part is scary. But if it's swaying it, then it's good, because you rather have it sway than not sway. Because if it doesn't sway, then the energy
is not
really going anywhere. It's going to just crack the foundation and have the building collapse.
No, and I think that's the fascinating thing. Like, the earthquakes themselves here in Japan are not that deadly. Like, there was that one in Kumamoto, what it was, like 4 years back?
Mm.
That was pretty
strong. Wait, take that back.
All right, I keep making these statements today. but like, when you compare it with countries like, I don't know, there was earthquake in Nepal and some other countries. It's like just the quality of the buildings here. And again, I'm knocking on wood here.
Well, the thing is, yeah, okay. I'm trying to stop you before you say anything else careless.
No, but like you said, the buildings are designed here to be able to withstand at least some sort of earthquake, which is good, I guess.
Yeah, if you take a look at some of the buildings in Manhattan, in New York, you know, none of them, you know, some of them are 100 years old.
Yeah.
Just, I don't think those are built to sway. But yeah, that's the thing. I guess Japan has been through it enough to like develop certain codes, like regulation codes and whatnot, and for standards for building buildings.
Yeah, exactly. I think, and I mean, they're building some of the largest structures in the world. Like, you look at the Skytree or even just some of the skyscrapers in Shinjuku and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Definitely not the tallest buildings, but among the taller ones.
Yeah, even Skytree was built for swaying and earthquakes. That's the scary part, because Skytree is pretty high up.
Yeah, I don't know if it was Skytree or something, but I saw it on TV. They have like this giant, I think it's like a giant ball that's essentially meant to, I guess, sway and stabilize the thing if there's an earthquake or something.
Yeah.
Maybe absorb the energy or something, like you were saying.
Well, it's not absorb the energy. It's to like let the energy go.
Yeah, convert it into the motion of the giant.
Yeah, because if it absorbs the energy, then energy is nowhere to go. The things start cracking.
Yeah. Not absorb the energy, but convert the energy into the motion of that big thing, rather than of the entire building falling down or something.
Yeah.
Again, no architect or anything by any means. So, just something that I remember seeing on TV the other day. So what have you been up to recently?
Right.
In the last week?
Nothing at all. Well, we're trying to hit these goals, because you know today is the today's the 4th of July.
Happy, what is it? Independence Day.
Thank you. I don't know how to celebrate it.
Fireworks.
Because, well, there's two issues kind of going on here. One, being in Japan, and two, we're still, you know, with the whole COVID thing going on. It's like, what do you do?
Well, how about this? You go to YouTube and you search for, like, fireworks, and I'm sure there's...
Nah.
You can play it on your TV or something.
Maybe I'll go to the gym and exercise my right to have guns for arms and build my guns for the gun show, if you know what I mean. I think that's the plan for today.
That sounds good.
Yeah. How about you?
Yeah, we were, before we started recording this, the preparations for the wedding are kind of going on, I guess. So we went to photo studio. I think it's, again, I keep tying it back to business because we're on this podcast that's kind of about business. Mm-hmm. But it's such a fascinating, like there were at least, I think there were at least six or seven couples at the time that I made the booking yesterday and when we went there today. Mm-hmm. And each of the, essentially they're, this company is doing both like proper weddings, but also photo weddings, which is what we're kind of going with. Mm-hmm. It's like they either take you somewhere on location, so to like Mount Fuji or one of those places that's kind of photogenic, I guess. Mm-hmm. Or you can take the photos in their studios in they have one in Shinjuku, one in Omotesando, I think in Yokohama and a couple other places. And they essentially charge between, I don't know, $1,000 and maybe $2,500 for the photo shoot. Mm-hmm. But it includes, of course, it includes the photographer, it includes the hair and makeup artist, and it includes some of the dresses or the kimonos, depending on which one you go with.
Yeah.
But then some of the kimonos cost like $1,000 to rent for the photo shoot. I guess those are like, because I think some of them can easily cost upwards of $10,000 when you actually buy them. So I guess they have to rent them for a pretty high price. But anyways, the point being, I think with coronavirus still being here, and I guess because of that, less and less people doing kind of big weddings and more opting for this. All right, let's take a nice bunch of family photos and then let's go for a nice dinner kind of setups for a nice family dinner. I think their demand is going through the roof. And the lady there was saying that, even before Corona, they were doing 20 per day at one studio, at the Shinjuku studio, I guess, which is not bad, right? It's like, what? $20,000 in revenues. And now they're doing about 10, a bit more than 10, because they have to space them out more and so on, so that there's not too many people gathering. But anyways, yeah, their business seems to be going so well that they just went public, apparently.
Okay.
I'll have to look it up and buy some stock, I think. Because, yeah, I think it's a great business. It's like I went recently for a funeral and a wedding right now. And I think it's the two businesses where people don't really care about price. Right, it's like essentially with funeral, you just it's like okay, it's like, you're not going to negotiate much there. And the same with wedding, it's like if you show me a really nice dress that costs $1,000 to rent, and like my fiance wants it, then all right, that's what we're doing. It's like, there's not much negotiation there either. So I think those are really good ones in terms of like being able to make large margins.
Yeah, anything that's like related to life events, I think is a good business. Because obviously life goes on and these events happen all the time, whether it's graduation, birth, death, weddings.
Yeah, exactly.
Anything like that.
Yeah, and the other thing is like we were talking about the watches and the necklaces and even this thing is like when you think about the fact that it's, well, hopefully once in a lifetime event, then it's like who cares whether you spend $2,000 or $3,000 or $10,000 for that matter, right? It's like,
yeah.
When you kind of amortize it over the rest of your lifetime, essentially, then it's however much you spend, it's going to be a good investment.
Yeah. It's good for the business.
Yeah. So I'll have to look the company up and see if I can buy some of their shares.
All right. Sounds good.
So that's one thing. The other thing is, you know, I think I mentioned, I've got a bunch of tax bills arrive in my mail the other day. So paid those off. Feels good.
The prepayment one?
Yeah, the prepayment one and also the local tax for last year.
Yeah, it feels good. It's nice to get it out the way. It's one of these things, like paying, again, like I said it last week, paying taxes in Japan is an odd pleasure.
Yeah, not even in Japan. I was actually thinking about this. It's like, you know, the richer people get, the more they tend to, like, I don't think it's a good idea, but the more they tend to buy expensive cars or whatever, vacations, and like compete on that. Mm-hmm. And I realized that taxes are the only thing where they compete the other way around. It's like, rather than being like, oh, I paid more in taxes, they're like, oh, I paid nothing in taxes, but I'm a billionaire, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, maybe if people try to, maybe if people treated taxes the same way. But then again, I guess it also depends on where you live. Because like we're talking, I think in Japan, the taxes are, and you can always argue whether they're well spent or not. But I think the infrastructure and stuff like that that the country provides,
yeah,
I think it's well worth the taxes.
Yeah, agreed.
Because again, you also see people talking about, oh, the country can't manage money and country can't spend money. Mm-hmm. But like if you look at a company that's a similar size of a government, which is pretty difficult, then I'm pretty sure they're not perfect at spending money either.
Yeah.
And definitely not as perfect as commentators on Twitter or on Facebook.
Everyone's an expert until it's their job to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Hard. You know, it's like, that's the, I guess the rule of thumb is don't pay attention to anyone that takes hard stances on Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, that's, you know, part of the thought that I have is like what social media really kind of promotes is, and especially on Twitter, is the whole, like, it kind of makes you put out snide, sarcastic remarks, pointing out the faults of others, you know, like someone, yeah. You know, someone like posts up a take and someone sees that, it could be a snide take, and then you have another person going the complete opposite. But it's like, the one thing is just like, you know, I don't know, I liken it to going back to Wall Street and finance, where people don't produce value, they just suck value out the side. It's a similar kind of vibe, where it's like you're not exactly having productive discussions, and you're just essentially putting out crap. And the other point was just that, I mean, if you're going to point out how hypocritical or lacking people are in certain areas, flip that back on yourself, and I guarantee you, anyone with a magnifying glass on them, you can easily find faults of their own that they're not living up to. Like, now, if let's say that they're bringing up a valid point that should be looked into, that's fine. But if it comes across like in a snarky, snide, like sarcastic type of tone, like I'm better than you, I'm smarter than you, look at these people.
Yeah,
that's when it's just like, you know, how about we flip it on you and find, you know, faults in you, because I guarantee you'll have it. And the thing is, it just promotes bad vibes, bad energy all around, and doesn't really create for a productive discussion. If anything, it just makes people like draw up walls and defenses and go on the attack of each other. That's why, like, when I see, you know, like I have friends on Facebook, and like they just post nonstop such, like, you know, snide remarks. Look at these people, blah blah blah. And these people are the first people I hide, because it's like literally not adding anything to the conversation. And again, if you flip the magnifying glass on them, you will find where they're lacking. And it's just like, what about you?
Yeah, I think the social media, as much as it's done good stuff, and I think it's done a lot of good stuff, and I think it's good for many things, I think it's also like suddenly everybody has a voice, and everybody believes they're on equal grounds with their voice just because they can express it.
Yeah.
And again, it's always been the way that, like, it's not always the smartest or it's not always the most accurate view, or it's not always the most sensible view that kind of takes the lead.
Yeah.
But now it's just even more easier to build any sort of audience around any sort of crazy idea.
Yeah, just take an extreme stance and people will listen to it. That's how it's built. Take a polarizing stance.
Yeah, exactly.
I kind of miss the old days of social media, where people just post what they're eating and stupid thoughts of the day. Like, I still have.
I know. It's like, if I look at my Facebook from like 2010 or 2009 or 8, it's like,
yeah.
Oh, I'm studying for an exam.
Maybe it's an age thing. I wonder, maybe it's an age thing.
I wonder. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like it's turned into, again, it's also probably the fact that since back then, Facebook actually figured out how to keep people's attention and how to keep the eyeballs, which is creating kind of polarization, because that's what keeps people. Like, at some point you get bored of just seeing somebody say, hey, I'm studying right now, hey, I'm listening to music right now.
Yeah.
And it becomes much more engaging to talk about, oh, this politician did that, or this thing should be this way, or that thing should be this way.
Yeah.
And it's essentially conflict sells, right, in a way.
Yeah. They definitely grew smarter in that area. And they figure out what works. It's the stuff that drives division. It's the, you know, and gets angry reactions that ironically gets the most engagements.
Yeah.
Which in turn means more money for them.
Yeah, exactly. And at the same time, I guess that's kind of the interesting thing about Facebook, is because on Facebook, really the people that you see stuff from are mostly people that you know, at least to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's like a tightly knit kind of, everybody has their own bubble.
Yeah.
Versus like Twitter, for example, which is kind of more one on many, and like it's more open. I feel like Facebook's the most dangerous in that way, because you kind of I don't know how to explain what I'm trying to say. But it's like, in a way, I feel like on Facebook more than on any other platform, you see more of what you want to see.
Mm.
Right? It's like you like something once and suddenly you see similar things popping up. And you definitely get that on Twitter too, but I just feel it's like it's not as extreme there.
Yeah.
Perhaps because it's not as popular.
Like, but do you sit on Twitter a lot?
I check Twitter every now and then because I follow a bunch of people there kind of in the productivity space and in business and so on. And like if I look back at my use of social media, I don't use Instagram at all nowadays, or I don't even look at Instagram at all nowadays pretty much. Because again, you're just looking at nice pictures. Not too much value in there. Facebook is fine because you kind of see people you know and see what they're up to. But again, it's also more and more kind of conflicts and you also see different people posting different comments. And so I feel like it's getting more and more divided. So I only use mostly Messenger to talk with people.
Check into Facebook stories though.
Yeah, I check Facebook stories every now and then when something interesting pops up.
I'll take that as a compliment.
And then Twitter, I feel, is like the only place or the only social media where I feel like I can get some sort of educational value. And again, oftentimes it's just kind of one-liners and oversimplified things and stuff like that. But it's still, I find it the most, I don't know if this is the right word, but the most mentally stimulating place, I guess you could say, out of those three, I think.
Okay.
I think there's many better places to go for learning and so on. But like between the need to scroll for something and the kind of the need to just randomly browse social media, as everybody nowadays does, I feel like it provides the most return on time spent in terms of...
Yeah. I see that you popped in a tweet into the show notes.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you know that there are people who go through life paying virtually zero attention to what's happening on Twitter? It's true, and they're called almost everyone. What's that?
Yeah, so I thought that's interesting because, again, I follow a bunch of people on Twitter, and it's kind of easy to think, oh, maybe this is what everybody thinks.
Mm-hmm.
But then you kind of go outside the Twitter world because, again, there's quite tight communities on Twitter around like finance and around productivity and around all these spaces, essentially around all the spaces where you can make money. And like you see people talking about this and that, and then you kind of either consider it to be a general knowledge or you consider it to be the general opinion. But then you actually realize that, oh no, actually it's like, these are just some random people. And sure, they might have whatever, however many thousands followers or whatever, but you get off Twitter and nobody knows them. And
yeah.
It's like their opinion doesn't matter. It's interesting. Actually, I was watching something on TV yesterday, I think. There was this cosplayer. She was saying she makes like $500,000 a year or something doing cosplay. I don't know if it's for sponsorship or what. I didn't watch that closely, but she was mentioning that she doesn't like essentially speaking out on issues because then people take it as, oh, all cosplayers think this way just because she's one of the more or one of the better known ones on the topic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this is kind of easy to happen where you listen to somebody and just because they're, I think you had it in your biases or when you're talking about the fallacy detective, it was like, what was the appeal of authority or something?
There's also the halo effect where you like a person that you accept everything else that they say or you look past their flaws.
Yeah. I think that's one. And I think the other one is the authority where, oh, just because this famous cosplayer said it, it applies to all cosplayers kind of thing. And it was something with Matsuko, who's like a Japanese crossdresser, I guess. It's like according to Wikipedia, Matsuko Deluxe is a crossdressing gay man who prefers male pronouns. But anyways, he or she was saying the same thing. She's like, or he's like, I've never spoken up on gender issues because I feel like if I speak up about it on TV, then whatever I say is my own opinion will kind of be taken as the opinion of this entire group or whatever.
Mm. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's hard because I think everybody should be able to express their opinion. But at the same time, like I see their concern because one, they're definitely going to get as much good feedback they'll get. They'll get the same amount of bad feedback, which is, I guess, something you have to deal with if you're in that kind of position. But yeah, I don't know, because on one hand, I think they should still express their opinion. It's like you being famous isn't an excuse for you not expressing an opinion on something. But at the same time, it can be kind of, what's the right word? I don't know if asymmetrical is the right word. But again, like because this cosplayer says it or because Matsuko says it, then I can see why a lot of people would kind of take it as this statement of the entire group, or why they would kind of think of them as the ambassador for the entire group, even though that's not necessarily the case. And in that case, it's clearly not the best thing, right?
So, mm-hmm.
It's like just because I think one thing doesn't mean that everybody that's like me thinks the same. Kind of.
Yeah. Wait, I didn't expect this quote to go that way. I thought you meant, I thought the whole point of that tweet was like, just stop paying attention to Twitter.
Yeah, I think that I guess that's a take too. And perhaps that's what he's trying to say. And for that one, I don't know, because again, because that way it feels like too much of a generalization to me. It's like just like TV or just like YouTube or just like anything else, Twitter is just a platform, and you can find a lot of good stuff there. You can find a lot of bad stuff there.
Yeah,
and it's the same with YouTube. It's like, should you pay attention to YouTube or not? It's like it depends on what you're watching.
Yeah,
and I feel like it's the same with Twitter. It's like depends on who you're following. But at the same time, and the reason why I kind of tied it into the cosplayer thing is like sometimes it can feel like the Twitter person that you're following about a certain topic is kind of the ambassador for the entire topic, right? It's like, oh, this is the leading person in X, Y, or Z. But it doesn't necessarily mean that whatever he or she's saying is one the right thing or the best thing, mm-hmm. or anything like that. It's just another one of opinions to take kind of into forming your own opinion.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a lot of people that just go, oh, influencer A said this, so it's this way. It's like, no, sometimes there's more than one way. Sometimes what the influencer says might be completely wrong. Sometimes the influencer might be trying to sell you something. So that's why he or she says something, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess at the end of the day, on kind of the highest level, it just you should think critically. And
oh, that's the whole point of the fallacy detective. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the whole point of the book. But yeah, I see what you mean.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess it's good to remind ourselves of that book. I think it was a good one.
I actually don't. I recreated a Twitter account, but I don't check it that much. Just, I don't know. I'm out of the habit of like posting stuff, and it's weird. Like, cause I had deleted it for like a month, and then I don't even pop in like once a day, like maybe once every two or three days.
Yeah.
If anything, I still check Facebook and Instagram quite a lot. I think like Instagram in a way is the Facebook replacement, like, but I don't, obviously it's hard to say what's going on for other people, but for me it's like I think it's overtaken like my social interactions on Facebook.
Yeah.
And also like on apps like WhatsApp, like more private messengers seem to have overtaken Facebook on that, just the social interaction. Facebook is just like, I get no engagement on there nowadays, so I'm just kind of thinking maybe it's on the way out.
Yeah. I don't know. Again, you know how much you have to, how many times you have to tell me to post something on Facebook, whether it's this podcast or one of my videos or something, for me to actually get it there. So I'm pretty inactive on the platform as well, and only use it as I mentioned, on only use Messenger for communicating with my family and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And Instagram, yeah, I go on Instagram every now and then to kind of scroll through and see some pictures, but not too often. But the thing I like about Instagram is that I feel like it's the most peaceful platform.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you're just looking at nice pictures and there's,
we're checking through the stories. It's all about the stories.
Yeah, I guess it's all about the stories nowadays. But in either case, it's there's not many like conflict type of stuff, right? It's like there's, at least as far as I know, it's like there's no politics, or at least nowhere near the extent you see them on Facebook or Twitter.
Yeah.
Just because of the nature of the platform. It's highly visual. And I guess nobody wants to see photos of politicians.
Anyways. Yeah.
So yeah, I think, yeah, I guess the main point is just to think critically, thinking about the tweet. And I think you could replace Twitter with pretty much any other platform and still get the same effect, where it's like whatever you choose, don't let it be your bubble.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I guess perhaps from the point of view that you were mentioning, I don't know, because if you take it from that point of view, then it would kind of imply that you shouldn't be looking at Twitter, which I don't think is necessarily what should be the case. Did you know there are people who go through life paying virtually zero attention to what's happening on Twitter? I don't know. Depends on who you're following. But yeah, anyways, I guess the main topic here today is the goals, right?
Yeah.
We've been working to various degrees of heart over the last month. And I'm sure we've hit our last month's goals. So do you want to start?
Did we? Oh, you can start.
Yeah, I was actually re-listening to the episode because I didn't see the goals noted down in my Notion. But essentially, I think, as I was mentioning, my dad's been here and the wedding thing kind of came in as well. So essentially, I think I said the last time I set the goal pretty low. I set the bar pretty low. and just said I would continue my 9 times per week publishing on my blogs. And that part, I think I almost hit. I know that, again, last month, just like the month before, there's been a couple of days where I, maybe 2 or 3 times where I missed posting on my smaller sites. But then again, I also started the doc site, like I was mentioning, the new site, and posted quite a few articles there. And I think, let me see. Yeah, so I published 50 articles altogether across my sites last month. So I think
that's a lot of articles.
Yes, yeah, so I think it averages to about 9 per week. So even though my schedule on some of the smaller sites got a bit mixed up, I still averaged over 9 articles per week.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, let's call it a hit.
Okay.
How about you?
I have 3 goals that I set for June. Two articles for the new site, 4 articles for the main big site, an email lead magnet. For the 4, I did them, and the email lead magnet I got started on, but I did not hit the 2 articles for the new site. So maybe I got a bit lazy after the stretch month goal, after putting in all that work. Oh, there was also a 4th goal that was update 25 old pieces of content, which I did, and I think I sent you the link.
Yeah,
I think I stayed up like until 5, not 5 a.m. That'll be bad. Until 2 a.m., like fixing up some stuff a week before.
Nice. That's dedication.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Like the next day I felt like crap, and today I kind of feel like crap.
Well, you hit your goal. So for the new site, did you at least order something with your writers, or?
No, I was just like out of it, you could say. The good news is, like, I think I did have some purchases from the new site, at least based on the niche that I'm in and the products that I promote. I did notice some on my Amazon report.
Yeah, so you don't have a separate tracking ID for
it? I do. Well, not a store ID. I did set a tracking ID, but it's still all under the main one. For some reason, so
interesting. Yeah, but it's good. I think you also start to have some regular traffic, even though it's not super high at this point yet, but it's a very new site. So I think just having regular traffic, and if that sale indeed comes from the new site, I think that's great. Yeah.
So I guess some progress. Well, better than none, you could say.
Yeah, I think that's good. I'm really curious to see what you're going to build out of your new site, especially even though you haven't posted there last month. But I think I think it's got huge potential, because it's such a it's a very specialized topic, but at the same time it's so broad, and there's so many different kind of sub areas that you can go into, I guess.
Well, send some keyword ideas my way. I'll put it up.
Yeah. Is my keyword still the most popular one?
I think so, yeah. Nice. Oh, I haven't checked the traffic this week.
That's cool. Yeah, I think the one that I sent you was like a VS keyword, like something versus something.
Yeah.
I really like those. There are so many combinations, and I think typically they tend to be fairly low competition, and there's a lot of people searching those things. Like, should you get this type of, I don't know, blender, or should you get that type of blender, or should you get this vacuum, or that one?
You're giving away our trade secrets.
Yeah.
Except we're not in a vacuum blender space, so it's okay.
Not yet.
Not yet. And I guess the good news is I also got started on that email lead magnet, so I'll continue that into July.
Is that that's the email course that you were showing me, right?
I just do 7 days of content and then post it up and see how it works. Well, obviously something is better than nothing, so it should somehow work.
Yeah.
But the next question is like how to attract the right demographic. So I'll have to think about that afterwards.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I had the email list magnet up in the past, like a different one.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, like if you're getting a lot of traffic, you're also getting a lot of unqualified leads that just decide to pop in their email for some reason.
Yeah. I wonder if you could make the hurdle a bit harder to subscribe, like maybe some simple quiz type of thing. Like in your case, it's language. So maybe just asking like, what's your current level of this language or something?
Yeah. I think I do have a quiz thing that I want to try out, like a quiz software that I got on AppSumo maybe like a month or two ago for this reason.
Oh, nice.
And I guess I'll try that out. And based on that, like based on the quiz results, you can segment your subscribers. And that, I guess, could give me some leeway as to how to target who I want to target.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds like a cool idea. Let me know how it goes, because as you know, I was thinking of doing a quiz sort of thing on my bigger side, but I never actually got around to finishing it. So
why?
That's a good question. I think I got away from the idea of even trying to do the email list for that site at some point, but I think it's something I should revisit definitely. Because
why do you want an email list? Because like you've been pretty adamant about not needing one.
what I was thinking is, like, even if I don't produce content, even if I just collect the leads and then send them like a, this is the 10 new articles I published this week type of email.
Yeah.
And if it results in some extra traffic as a kind of interim solution, I think it's still good. And then again, like you said, there's, you can always experiment with things. Maybe I can try different affiliate offers kind of in the space. Maybe I can, again, I can just use it to send traffic back to the site. But whatever it is, I feel like it's worth giving it a shot.
That's new.
Yeah, that's new. But still, I think my main strategy still is just focusing on publishing content, a lot of content. But yeah, I'm especially for the larger site. I think there's potentially some ways to, because again, ultimately it's, even though right now it's SEO focused, and I definitely want it to continue to be kind of SEO focused and most traffic from Google, I feel like if I can over time develop it into some bigger piece of media, essentially, it would be more helpful when I try to resell it potentially in the future or something like that.
Yeah.
When I try to sell the site, not resell.
Yeah. If the site has an email list, then you could use that to up its value.
Yeah, exactly. I was trying, I don't know if you ever tried it with your site, but there's Empire Flippers has this tool where you just kind of punch in the different information that you have about your site, and it kind of spits out the valuation range. And one of the questions, do you have an email list and like how many subscribers? And again, I think if you have an email list and some sort of open rate, then even if the emails don't necessarily convert or don't necessarily connect to any affiliate offer or something, there is definitely some value there that a potential buyer could maybe have a better idea of how to leverage.
Yeah.
So because one of the reasons I don't like about email is that essentially the bigger your list gets, the more you have to pay for the software, generally, I believe, right?
I think it depends, but I don't imagine anyone growing such a massive list where the costs becomes prohibitive.
Yeah, I guess so. And again,
I mean, that's maybe the case with MailChimp. I'm not sure about the other ones.
Yeah, I don't know. I know that MailerLite charges more after like 1,000 subscribers or something too. But I guess, yeah, at the end of the day, even if it increases the value of the site by $1,000 or something, and I think generally we're talking about like six-figure value site, and then even if it increases it by $1,000 or $2,000, which is nothing in the bigger scheme of the value of the site, it will probably pay for the money you spend on the software anyways.
Yeah. Wait, so that's your issue with email, that the more subscribers you get, the more you have to pay to send to them?
No, I think the underlying issue is that I don't know what to do with the subscribers, I guess. And then the issue is that the more subscribers you collect, the more you have to pay for, essentially it's like storage. The more junk you have, the more you have to pay to keep it.
Yeah.
And then if you don't know what to do with the junk, then
I don't know if there's an actual issue, because with AWeber, I haven't seen any particular limits.
Really? Let me
see. But my email is also very small, so
pricing. Yeah, because it's like 0 to 500 subscribers, $20 a month. 500 to 2,500 is 30. Up to 5,000 is 50. Up to 10,000 is 70. Up to 20,000 is 150. I also have to look at the math of like how many people would you have to mail, how often, and how often would they have to open it for you to at least break even on the software with ad revenue. Because again, if you can send people back to your site, and if enough people open it, and if enough people go back, oftentimes enough, then
it's strange to hear this particular argument, because you pay a lot for Ahrefs, and I think email follows a similar format.
You mean for Ahrefs? But I know it's giving me value, because I pay $100 per month.
Yeah.
And I know that if I find a few articles or a few keywords that I wouldn't otherwise have found, then eventually I'll get that money back.
Yeah.
Whereas
you don't have proof of the email side, whereas I have proof for that. If I send X amount, I can expect that at least X amount of dollars back.
Yeah, exactly. I almost feel paralyzed. And it's because of my lack of experience in that field.
Yeah.
And again, I've sent a few emails, and I've made a few dollars for email. But I think in your case, both in your kind of professional life as well as in your side hustle, I think you've done a fair amount of email to kind of know how it works.
Yeah.
And also, again, I think I mentioned this a few times, and I feel like the audience and kind of the intent of the audience is a bit different. And I would argue that what you're doing is better suited for email than what I'm doing. But that is not to say that, again, like you keep saying, that perhaps I should actually have an email list.
Well, I've given up on trying to persuade you.
You see, when we talk about these things here, I take them seriously, and they actually affect the way I think. And I think email is something that I keep returning to, and that I have a very weird relationship with, where I feel like part of it is me just not knowing what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps if I put more efforts into learning it, maybe I'd be able to make it work.
Yeah.
But and the other part of me is like, no, this is just not the model that works best in this case. And it's kind of like a struggle of those two.
Mm-hmm. I think, do you re-listen to our old episodes?
To be honest, I re-listened today to our last month goals episode to make sure that I know what we're talking about. But I should re-listen to some of the other ones as well.
Yeah, it's good for quality assurance and it's good for seeing your own performance from a third person perspective. But in this case, to go to last week's episode where we talk about beginners and why it's hard for them to see things and get started, as is the case with, say, investing.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's a very similar case here.
Yeah, I'll look at the numbers because if I don't, and again, we're talking about 10 or 20 bucks here, so it's for the first few months, as long as you don't have too many subscribers.
I think too many subscribers is not a bad issue to have.
Yeah,
at the same time, it's not easy to get too many subscribers. Everyone wants more subscribers. So, like, for example, when I, even though, you know, I complain a bit when I pop up my forum, it's not like I'm getting like dozens or tens or hundreds of conversions every day.
Yeah.
It's still a battle in itself to actually get conversions and email opt-ins.
Yeah, maybe I should try.
It's not like something that's just, you know, it's not like you're going to get hit with costs instantly.
Yeah, maybe I should try adding like an opt-in form at the bottom of the posts or something. So I guess definitely not next month, but I'll definitely be giving an email list a shot on my big site. Just have to put some thought into what the strategy there would be and what I would be trying to achieve out of it. And I think the first thing is, and it's something I wanted to look into for a while now, is just figuring out what the math works out like for, all right, you collect email subscribers and the only thing you do with them is you send them back to your site. What would you have to do to make that worthwhile?
Mm-hmm. You could send them to one of your pages where you promote products.
Yeah, either that or to the new content. Or
yeah.
I think there's a few options to consider.
I guess we can expect that in the next few months, huh?
Yeah, I think next few months is a good time frame.
Okay.
But how about the next month? So
I'm going to keep the goals the same, so as not to overwhelm myself.
All right.
I think I added too much more to my plate for this past month with the 25 content updates, the 6 articles, and there's also the book that we had to read. I think probably a bit more than I could handle after the stretch goal.
Yeah.
So that's why I don't think I've done everything. And I'm not sure if I'm not finished with the book. I'm on chapter 10.
Oh, nice. I'm still on chapter 4. I just finished chapter 4.5 yesterday night.
Then we're not ready to talk about it just yet.
No, maybe next episode. Let's see for that. But I'm starting to enjoy the book more and more. And I think, like you mentioned, it's getting into more her personal story rather than just her kind of recapping on what the space industry has been up to.
Yeah.
And I really like her approach of, like, essentially, she's not an astronaut, right? I still didn't get to the end, so I don't know. But she's
a communications.
Yeah, exactly. So she's like a marketing person trying to promote space. And I guess at some point she went into a space company, which is where I kind of ended reading last night. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a great story because, and I think she's a great example of somebody that just has some sort of passion and goes after it. And maybe even though she knows that in the near future, she's not going to be an astronaut or whatever, mm-hmm. she still kind of tries to get into the industry and tries to be an insider and tries to learn about it, tries to help the industry, tries to promote it.
Mm.
And I thought that's really cool because, like, you know, I had a chance to fly with a couple of NASA research aircraft. And again, I think that was kind of a similar thing where I was like, oh, I really like space and I really love aviation. I really love space. What can I do to kind of get close? And like, okay, I'm no Richard Branson or Jeff Bezos or Maezawa, whatever the Japanese guy's name is. So I'm not going to go into space for a while, although fingers crossed, I definitely hope to go one day.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the closest thing I can do? It's like, okay, maybe there's something I can do with NASA. And then what is the closest thing I can do there? Like, okay, maybe I can try emailing the guy, or maybe I can try getting in touch with them and trying to arrange some way to cover one of their research aircraft for one of the magazines that I write for every now and then. Mm-hmm. And from there, it's like you just do the things and either they work or they don't work. And I feel like a lot of people would, in her shoes, for example, would not be willing to put in the extra effort of, like, she was saying she went to the conferences and she built the network and she talked to people.
Mm.
And I feel like a lot of people would just go like, oh, space, that's kind of out of reach, and call it a day and go into some other job or whatever. Whereas I feel like she really, and again, as cliche as it sounds, I feel like she followed her passion and kind of succeeded with it.
Mm.
But yeah, chapter 4.5 is as far as I got so far. So
okay.
I'm sure you have a better idea about what her life's like than I do.
Well, I don't know if I'm the best judge of that. But yeah, let's talk about it next week.
That sounds good.
When we both finish the book.
All right. I like that pressure. Now I got to finish the book. And it's a short book, though.
I hope so, because I can't tell by Kindle, you know.
No, it's pretty small, and it's only, what, 200-something pages.
Okay. I don't know. 200 pages has been a struggle for me this past year.
Yeah, my struggle has been the Rockefeller book, which which I still haven't finished, which is like 600 pages or something.
Yeah. I have similar books like that that I just set aside and like just filed under whatever. I'll finish it one day, but it's not today.
Yeah, and then we gotta start thinking of what the next one is.
Well, let's finish one step at a time.
Sounds good. All right, next week let's discuss this book, and let's also try to find a new one to order for the next month. So in the meantime, I guess the goals. So you'll continue publishing on all the new sites.
Yeah.
And I guess you still haven't finished the email course, right? Here.
No. I think I've gotten the major hurdle out of the way. The other days should be fairly easy.
Yeah. Which day are you on now?
Just did day one is the one I showed you.
Oh, I see. And there's going to be 5 days, 6 days, 7.
Yeah. The rest should be fairly simple. It's just this one. Cause like I wanted to include, you know, citations and like to make sure that what I'm talking, not citations, sources, citing my sources, that the stuff that I'm actually talking about is valid and real and proved and true, instead of just like trying to be every other blogger and, you know, blowing hot air.
Yeah, I actually liked it when you sent it to me. It's like it was one of the most legit looking ones that I've seen in a while, where you actually went through the hassle of putting in sources, and I think the sources are actually legit sources and not like Johnny's blog or something like that.
Yeah, avoiding Johnny's blog and Funky Bob's.
Exactly. So I think that's really cool. And
I think I could get it done within a week, but we'll see how that goes.
All right. In that case, it's the goal for the next month, I guess. Yeah. It's 4.5 times as much time. On my side, I'll definitely keep publishing at least 9 times per week. I think your package came. Yeah. So I'll continue publishing 9 times per week across my sites, at least. As you know, I also started or planned out kind of the content publishing for the rest of the year. It's a bit of a stretch goal, I think. So essentially, I aim to publish close to 100 articles per month, a bit over 80 articles per month in August, September, October, November, across my 4 or 5 sites. So I have to essentially get ahead with preparing the briefs for that, because once I have a lot of briefs prepared, then I think I'll have to go out and hire a couple more writers.
Mm-hmm.
I'll aim to create 180 briefs for across my different sites so that I can ramp up the content. Because again, I was kind of looking at the financials and the sites are making a good amount of money, and mm-hmm. I think I'm better off just ramping up the production and ramping up the content and trying to grow them and see where we can take it in the next year or two.
Nice. So a month, you have a month to come up with 100 plus briefs?
180, yeah.
Well, I want to know the results on that.
Yeah, me too. But yeah, I think it's a good stretch goal. And I also think one of the reasons I'm doing this is essentially I want to get to the point where I have at least 3 or 4 sites that are earning decent amount of money, because mm-hmm. then I can sell one of them and it's a nice cash injection, and I mm-hmm. can either put it into growing the other ones or into buying another site or something.
Yeah.
So I'd like to get to the point where I have at least like 3 or 4 sites that earn at least $1,000. So now I have a site that earns more than that, but the other ones are, the smaller ones are not at that level. So I think if I can get the smaller ones to the $1,000 or $2,000, level, then it's kind of easier to sell one of them without feeling bad.
Okay. So, all right. Well, I like the sound of that goal. Cause it's a lot to do, but I think that's kind of the reality to these things is if you want oversized results and, you know, benefits and whatnot, then you need to put in like a lot more effort, oversized proportion. Like you have to put in an oversized amount of effort. It's not one of these things that you can just like, oh, I'll do 4 posts this week, like myself.
Yeah, exactly. I think it depends on what you're looking for, because I think that's the beauty of this. It's like even with 4 posts a week, over time, those posts add up.
Yeah.
Right. Versus when you're trying to grow it more kind of rapidly, then yeah, trying to produce as much as possible. But then it's a different beast, I think, because then you have to think about, all right, how are you going to manage the writers, because you obviously can't write all the content yourself, and also it kind of gets messy if you just do it for Upwork or for email or something.
Yeah,
so you got to put in place systems and stuff like that, but yeah, I think this is the fun and challenging part of it, and And I'd definitely like to get to the point where I can sell one of my sites for, yeah, at least like high five figures, but more like the six-figure range, mm-hmm. without it being the main site. So.
All right. That sounds good.
Okay. Yeah. Gotta ramp up those briefs. They're kind of easy to make, but at the same time, it is a lot of time because, again, you have to go through a lot of keywords and find good ones.
We should do an episode on how you create briefs.
Yeah, we should. And the other thing, just to mention one last thing here, like before I used to kind of, I had this goal of publishing 9 articles per week, so I would make 9 briefs in a week,
yeah.
kind of approach, whereas now it's more of, okay, let's just make a whole ton of briefs. Mm-hmm. I feel like that made it a lot easier in terms of like, when I only had 9 to make in a week, I just spent too much time looking for the right keyword. Mm-hmm. Whereas at the end of the day, if I want to grow the site, I'd end up writing both keywords, but I would spend time deciding, all right, should I do A or should I do B? Because I only need 9 this week.
Yeah. But so you're less picky.
Yeah. But with this more kind of high level, all right, let's do 500 by the end of the year kind of approach, you're less picky because you have more slots to fill in, essentially.
Yeah.
Which is good and bad, I guess, because got to make sure that you're kind of not slipping into stuff that's too competitive or stuff that doesn't have any search volume. Mm. But at the same time, like, you don't have to agonize over, oh, should I do this or should I do that? Because you're going to do both. And, you know, so it's definitely smoother this way than it was when I was kind of doing it on a weekly basis. Right. And at a smaller scale.
Nice. All right. That sounds good. So goal set for July.
Yeah. Goal set for July. And before we know it, we're approaching the end of the year.
Again. All right. Time flies.
Definitely does.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Side Hustles and Stuff podcast. And today is one of those episodes where we just recap the goals of last month and set goals for the new month. And then we talk about them because talking about them makes them more likely to happen because we talk about what we do and we... Talking about what we do requires doing things so we can talk about what we've done. Get it? It's exactly why we do them. To check out all the stuff that we talked about today, visit the show notes at sidehustlesandstuff.com/E55. This is episode 55, Keishi.
Oh, wow. All right. 55. Cool. Talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week.